Of a melodramatic title there, Ecological Tragedy, but I think as we go through this, you'll see that it really has the potential to be one. So Bud wanted to start off with acknowledgements, and I think the point here is that this is a presentation that Bud has synthesized a lot of information from various researchers in the Forest Service, especially Steve Frederick and Jim Hanula. We'll see their data as we go through this, as well as some of the state people there, Bud in Florida, South Carolina, Georgia. So a lot of people have been involved in this project. And also sort of an introduction, but I think it's kind of a summary here. So after this slide, we get the acknowledgments and the summary, so I'll wake up in about 20 minutes and we'll be done. But as a way of introduction, lower wilt is a new disease. It's really devastating the red bay tree in the southeastern United States. It's caused by a new fungus or a new species of Rafflesia that is vectored by this ambrosia beetle. And not only affects red bay, but it has the potential to affect other Lauraceae. And it's rapidly spreading through the southeast, and there's concern about what it might do when it gets into the Lauraceae in the Americas. So we'll go through each of those points here. A little bit of background about what red bay is. I guess the saying goes that any good cook in the southeast who makes gumbo puts red bay in it, or bay leaves from red bay trees. So it has its ecological and economic uses up there. It's in Lauraceae, as it says, evergreen in the southeastern coastal plain. You see the map, maybe you can see the map in the lower right corner there. It does have some ecological roles as far as wildlife, the fruits for wildlife, and it is the only known host of the Palmetes swallowtail. As far as the beetle goes, it's kind of your typical xyliberine ambrosia beetle, the skewed sex ratio, the polygyny, feeding on ambrosia fungus, which is key to this whole discussion, and one of the many exotics that have come into this country. It's from southeastern Asia, the countries you see there. What's a little bit atypical about this, though, is that it has somewhat of a restricted host range. As it says there, it's in Lauraceae in Asia, a few other host families, although in North America we've only seen it in Lauraceae, and I'm not quite sure about some of those other hosts. I think the host, the Lithocarpus, comes from Japan records. I think those other ones are from mostly from India, Bangladesh. So most ambrosia beetles, xyliberine ambrosia beetles, have a very wide host range. This one may not. A little bit of history of it. We found the first Xyliberis glabratus beetles in EDRR, or Early Detection Rapid Response, traps in 2002 outside of Savannah, Georgia. We found maybe about five or so beetles in traps, and then with Forest Service and APHIS help, we looked around the Savannah area, put a bunch of traps up, and never found any more beetles in 2002. And we thought, well, maybe just the first beetles came out of the warehouse and that was it. They came to ethanol and alpha-pinene plus ethanol baited traps, funnel traps, and most ambrosia beetles, xyliberine ambrosia beetles, would be attracted to those lures. So we didn't find any more when we did some hunting around there. In 2003, they started reporting mortality of red bay trees not too far from Savannah, in Hilton Head area especially. And then in 2004, Steve Frederick sent me some infested bolts, or beetles that he got from infested bolts of red bay in Hilton Head, and I figured it'd be the usual suspects of native and non-native species that are established, but it turns out they were all, almost all, Xyliberis glabratus. So that's when we started putting two and two together, I guess, and we saw that there were these red bay trees dying, and always associated with that were the Xyliberis glabratus. Shortly after that, then, they started to do these host testing with the Rafflesia species, and consistently isolated that species, which was a new species, from the sapwood, this discolored sapwood. I'll show you some pictures of the streaking, very striking. In 2005-2006, they continued to find it in the southeast, and found it in South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, and consistently, again, the fungus was always isolated from these dying trees. In 2007, we held a symposium with various groups to sort of address this problem. Here's the distribution map. The initial detection is up there near Port Wentworth, near Savannah, and the first few counties in 2004 were right around there, and then 2005 we started looking a little bit more, and we saw it in a bunch more counties in South Carolina, Georgia, as well as around Jacksonville, Florida. A little bit more concerted effort, and we found it in 2006 in a lot of places. In 2007, you see, 2006, I don't know if you can see down at the bottom there, but there was a sort of an isolated infestation in Indian River County, and in 2007, they found another one down there. So they're thinking that's probably firewood along the intercoastal waterway, because they like to, I guess some of the boaters like to use Red Bay for firewood around there. So that's what the thought is there. So it's probably not spreading that quickly since 2002. I think a lot of that is initial finds, but we'll continue to do surveys to figure out what it is, where it's going rather. So a little bit about the pathogen. What's unique here is that this is the fungal, the ambrosial fungal associate of the beetle. Most of the time, or I don't think any, maybe one other case, has this fungal association between the beetle and pathogenicity. It usually is not very pathogenic. It's an asexual anamorph stage of an ophiostoma, that's Rafflesia, and consistently isolated from these dying trees. And Steve Frederick's lab also did some isolations from the heads of the beetles and found that, as is typical of Xyloberus, the mycangia, where these spores are located, are on the base of the mandibles, paired mandibular mycangia. And what's pretty unique, and you'll see in one of these pictures too later, is the fungus is very pathogenic. You get one or two beetle hits when where the beetle is just feeding in the tree, and the fungus gets established there and it'll kill the tree pretty quickly. In fact, there on the lower left, you see one beetle hit. That might not have even been a successful breeding attack. The beetle just bored in there. It was a healthy tree. The tree might have been too healthy for the beetle to survive and to breed in, but the fungus got established, and then soon, not too long after that, you start seeing the wilting, and that tree dies, very much like the Dutch elm disease scenario, where the beetle feeds on it, transmits the fungus, then the next beetles come along later on when that tree is dead and breed in it. So, as it says there, the beetles happen to hit a healthy tree, maybe testing it, and they infect the tree. Trees go down pretty quickly. This is from September to May. You see the tree on the left there looking fairly healthy, and then on the right, just several months later, the tree is pretty much gone. At this point, the tree does not have beetles attacking it for breeding purposes. These are, I think, really good pictures showing the streaking of the fungal caused by the fungus. This is, again, before the beetle attacks the tree for breeding purposes. There may have been just a couple of beetle hits, either up or down the tree, but the fungus then spread throughout that tree, and that tree is just about dead, and then the beetles start to attack it. You see these are all beetle attacks there, those frass tubes, which I always thought was typical of Xylosandrus, but apparently it's also found in at least this species of Xyloberus. So those are all beetle, Xyloberus quadratus attack points, the beetles kicking out the frass, and this is, again, several months after that tree exhibited that streaking. So that tree is obviously dead. The impacts, some of these areas, I don't think people realized how prevalent Red Bay is in these coastal forests, but when you start seeing all these dead trees, it's pretty impressive. So the impacts have been pretty great there. There are some areas that in 2, 3, 5 years, all of the Red Bays were just about dead, especially the ones that are greater than 1 inch in diameter. Shade trees in residential areas, those are dying just as well as the ones that are in the forested areas. So quite a costly impact to the neighborhoods, again on the scale of emerald ash borer and Dutch elm disease from years ago. This is a study that Bud did in an island off the coast of Jacksonville, where he came in when they first started to notice Red Bay dying. They had maybe about the dotted line there is all of the trees size classes, and so I guess when he first got in there was about 10% mortality in July of 2005. By January of 2007, so a year and a half, you had about 92% mortality of all size classes. And you see the bigger size classes on the top side of the graph there going out first pretty quickly. So some of those trees were probably dying when he first got in there, but I think it's pretty impressive that mortality swept through these areas so quickly. And this is typical of what was seen on lots of coastal islands up and down from Charleston, South Carolina to Jacksonville. We were on Hilton Head and Hunting Island, and you'd see just 89% mortality when you talk to the people there that said, we didn't see any of this just 2-3 years ago. So very quick, very impressive. Host susceptibility. The beetle and the fungus have been recovered, of course, from Red Bay, as well as sassafras, which is also Lauraceae, as well as avocado, which is also in the same genus as Red Bay. The fungus only, but not the beetle, has been found from a few other species, all Lauraceae, pond spice, pond berry, and camphor tree. As I said, the fungus, but not the beetle. The beetle has probably been in there, but it's just very hard to find in these small trees, or some of those pond berry, pond spice, or almost shrub-like, bush-like trees. So there is possibility that other species may be vectoring this. There is some indication that Xyloborhynchus saccessinae may pick up the fungus, but they're still looking into that. Jim Hanuel and Steve Frederick are looking at that. But that's the only beetle that seems to be picking it up. But it's basically vectored by Xyloborhynchus glabratus. Some inoculation studies that Steve Frederick has done in lab. He's tested various species of Lauraceae, Red Bay, sassafras, avocado, the spice bush, as well as California bay laurel, and wilt symptoms were produced in each of those species. In the field, other species other than Lauraceae have not been affected, and he also challenged host seedlings with beetles. You see in the lower right corner there where he put beetles in gel caps and put those on some of these hosts, and they also came down with the wilt fungus, wilt disease. Some of the work that Jim Hanuel has been doing on the beetles and trapping and host attraction, lots of information there. I think some of the good information is, some of the important stuff is beetles, at least in the southeast there, seem to fly year-round. Male emergence, he's basing the generation time on when they start catching males in traps. These are Xyloborhynchus ambrosia beetles. Males don't fly, but he has these traps in the trees, and when they start getting males falling out of those trees into the traps, which are originally on uninfested trees, he's assuming that was the length of the generation. Anyway, so about 50 to 60 days. The key here too is that the best attractant seems to be red bay bolts or red bay trap trees. If you injure a red bay tree, that's the best attractant. I guess the good news is that sassafras bolts do not appear to be very attractive. They are attacking sassafras, but where they're attacking sassafras appears to be where there's a lot of dying red bay, and they may be spilling over into the sassafras. On the very bottom there you see Manuka oil. If you were listening to some of the Emerald Ash Borer talks yesterday, Manuka oil seems to be an attractant for that, and when they tested that, they found that it's just about as good as the red bay bolt. So invest in Manuka oil. Some good news and bad news, I guess, on this slide. They're testing avocado here, and you can see there that the beetles per trap is, these are avocado bolts, I guess, or traps on avocado trees and red bay trees, I think that's what it was. And number of beetles per trap was just about the same as it was on red bay, although it seems like the avocado was not quite as good a host. They didn't have as many entrance holes. They were landing on the traps, but not as many entrance holes. So that's good news, although, as I said before, all you need is about one or two beetles to attack this tree, vector the fungus, and the tree's going down. So whether or not they use it as a host may have some implications on whether or not it can sustain itself in an avocado grove. Here's some other work on avocado. What got the attention of a lot of people just about 3 or 4 months ago was a large avocado tree was killed in a backyard, a residential avocado tree outside of Jacksonville. This was the first field-infected avocado. They knew it could be infected in the lab. And then they did some choice tests on different varieties, And you see there only the Simmons variety appeared to be wilted and died from the fungus. Beetles bored into all the ones that they tested, but only that species, only that variety seemed to be affected by the fungus. So somewhat good news there. Management possibilities, well, that's going to be a tough one. Obviously, it's too late for eradication. Restricting firewood movement or movement infested wood is again important. Sanitation has to be quick and I guess I want to continue, huh? Yeah? Yeah? You don't know. Okay, Chris. And now?
Cancel.
Okay, I'll talk quick. Let's see. Can I change slides? No, can't even change slides. So trying to develop resistant trees, trapping out, I'm not too sure about that one. And I'm not sure what the rest of the slides say. So. No idea.
Yeah, just
I'm saying restart it.
All yours.
It's way out of my hands now. Bad things are going to happen.
Do what?
Alt continue?
Oh.
Okay, so Bud has done some. I'm going to talk real fast. I'm not touching anything. You want to stand here? Bud did some fungicide work and injected 10 trees with Alamo and had very good results. 10 of the 10 trees, which he then challenged with the fungus, did not show symptoms, and the control trees all showed the wilt fungus. And when he took samples from those infected trees and put them in petri dishes, they also had very good inhibition in the lab. So some promise there, although that would be obviously for high value, say residential trees. In closing, okay, make it through two more slides. Again, these are Bud's slides. He's saying how similar it is here to Dutch elm disease. I think that's true, certainly in the disease cycle as well as the potential impact that it's going to have in the southeast. What's scary here though is the broad host range. It's not just one genus, but appears to be the whole family. Varying degrees of pathogenicity maybe within the family, but certainly within the family of Loraceae, and Loraceae is a very common family once you get into other parts of Central and South America. So lots of concern there, or there should be lots of concern. More research is needed, obviously, and that's Bud's little plug in the very bottom there about more teeth needed for phytosanitary solid wood packing standards. In January of 07, we had a laurel wilt working group meeting, the first one we had, and we put together a steering committee. We have various committees here looking at monitoring and impacts and regulation and management and research. So we're just getting started. We're looking similar structure to the California Oak Mortality Task Force, trying to raise awareness and get people's attention that this is potentially a very serious problem. There's also a website hosted by our Southern Region 8 of the Forest Service. There's lots of good information, a lot of PowerPoints from that January meeting are on there, and that's kind of the place where we're putting the latest maps and the latest information. And I think that's it. We made it.
I guess we have time for one quick question.
Answer.
Can the elbow be applied, can it be absorbed in the whole year treatment or is
it? No, I think Alamo is just injected into the. One more? Done?
Yeah, one more.
Laura?
We'll push the envelope here.
Laura? Yeah, falling into it may be the case. It doesn't seem to be as different as Most ambrosia beetles will be attracted to the ethanol. This one does not seem to be that attracted to ethanol, so it may be more by chance that you'll get it in an ethanol trap.